Thank you. So item 22 is the...
Microphone needs to be a little closer.
Item 22 is the Salinas Stormwater Development Standards item for the agenda. It is a recommendation to require the City of Salinas to modify the language of their stormwater development standards in order to provide clarity and to establish effective hydro modification control requirements in the document. In my presentation today, I'll give you some background of why we're here today. I'll provide the water quality context of the issue at hand. I'll discuss the comments that we've received, and I'll provide a recommendation on where we go from here. At the September board meeting, staff recommended approval of the City of Salinas' stormwater development standards with a table of required revisions. After lengthy discussion regarding the language in the table, the board moved to adopt the stormwater development standards with a modified table of required revisions. On September 22nd, staff sent Salinas a letter containing the resolution and a table modified per what we believed was the board's intended changes to the table, and that's attachment one in your packet. This table has been disputed by both the City of Salinas as well as Monterey Coastkeeper. Since the table of required revisions has had more than one version, I'll take a moment to clarify the two different versions I'll be referring to in my talk today. I'll refer to the pre-board meeting table as the table that we started with when we walked in the room at the board meeting. And then the post-board meeting table is the table that resulted from the changes that happened during the meeting. And one of the items in that post-board meeting table is the disputed item that the City of Salinas and Monterey Coastkeeper have been discussing. There's two sections of the stormwater development standards that I'll be referring to, two of many sections in the document. Section 1 is titled the City of Salinas Requirements, and Section 4 is titled Stormwater Design Considerations. Section 1 contains a section titled Numeric Criteria for Stormwater Management, and a subsection in that is the disputed hydro modification subsections. Instead of referring to the number 1.3.4 point whatever A, I'll refer to this section as the disputed hydro modification subsection. Section 4 has subsections for both volume-based and flow-based treatment control best management practices, or BMP. This section does not contain hydro modification control requirements. And for clarity today, I'll refer to these subsections as the water quality treatment sections. Both Salinas and Monterey Coastkeeper have petitioned to the State Board. You can find those petitions as attachments 2 and 3. At the heart of the dispute is that the table produced by staff, per what we believed was the intention of the Board, deleted portions of, but not all of the language of the disputed subsection. The City of Salinas believes the board intended to delete all of the disputed subsection. The city has noted that they have listened to the audio of the board meeting, and the wording of the board motion specifically states that the disputed subsection should be deleted. The city is correct about the wording of the final motion. However, staff believes that the board intended to eliminate redundancies in the development standards, but did not intend for staff to remove hydro modification control from the document. And as I will explain in more detail, removing the disputed section leaves the City of Salinas with a document that has very little potential for controlling hydro modification, and therefore does not protect water quality to the maximum extent practical standard. If the changes in the pre-board meeting table were to be incorporated into the development standards, the document would have two components. It would have had in Section 1 hydro modification control requirements, and in Section 4, it would have had stormwater quality treatment. I'm going to spend some time to explain the differences between these two, because I believe those differences are kind of the heart of the confusion. So if you'll bear with me there. So first, hydro modification control, which is the language in Section 1. The purpose of hydro modification control language is to address erosion and sedimentation downstream. The pre-board meeting table would have added language to the standards that had the intention of hydromodification control for the larger sites. The larger sites are defined as a site with one or more acres of impervious surfaces. So this could be a fairly significant site with multiple acres. It would require for these larger sites that the post-project runoff rates and durations don't exceed the pre-project rates and durations, in keeping with the low-impact development concept of trying to mimic the natural hydrology. Now on to water quality treatment, which is in Section 4. The purpose of this language is to address pollutant loading and runoff from small storms, which are the storms that carry most of the pollutants. The treatment language contained here is similar to language to treatment requirements that have been used since the 1990s, and they were never intended to provide hydromodification control. The document provides two approaches to meet the stormwater requirements for the small storms that the developer can choose between: flow or volume-based treatment. A key point to understand here is that the term flow, as used in BMP design for water quality treatment at the site, is different than when using the term flow for discussing hydromodification control. In the case of hydromodification control, the term flow is used in relation to the effect of flows on the downstream system. Flow control for water quality treatment is unlikely to result in hydromodification control. You may be familiar with vortex separators, which are an example of flow treatment. These are throughput systems that are designed to settle out pollutants, not to provide mitigation for the effects of flows on the downstream system. So now volume. Volume-based treatment approaches fall into the retention-detention category. A typical example here would be a pond with storage where the pollutants settle out. These typical volume treatment approaches may provide an added benefit of some hydromodification control by controlling the runoff from the small storms. It could capture and retain or detain the volume in a pond or a vault and then possibly release it slowly, therefore protecting the downstream channels during the smaller storms. But it leaves you without any hydromodification control for the larger storms. So if the developer chooses flow-based treatment, they're likely not going to have any hydromodification control. If they choose volume-based treatment, they might get some hydromodification control for the smaller storms. So to summarize, there's two distinctive types of requirements: hydromodification control and water quality treatment. Part of the confusion is that the terminology and language that's used in these two requirements can be very similar. A lot of the terms like flow and volume are common to both of these type of requirements. This similarity in the language and how it's presented into the document, we believe, led to the confusion of thinking that the language in the two sections was redundant. It's staff's understanding that during the September hearing, Salinas raised concerns that the language in the document was redundant. The board was trying to be responsive to those concerns. The similar language that was contained in Section 1 and Section 4 appeared to be redundant and didn't look like they had unique purposes. Therefore, the motion directed the removal of language from Section 1, the hydromod control section, and the addition in Section 1 to simply a reference in Section 4. In theory, these two changes would have eliminated redundancy, but it would have preserved the intent of the document. In actuality, if the disputed hydromodification subsection is deleted, one is left with your typical stormwater quality treatment, which a developer could satisfy by building detention ponds or vortex separators. Some redundancy of language is appropriate, and it's not uncommon if you look at other stormwater development standards to see some typical language in both areas. But without requirements for hydromodification control, the document does not exceed the maximum extent practical standard. Sorry, what did I say? Does not meet. Sorry about that. Yeah, it does not meet the standard. Let's see. So both the City of Salinas and Monterey Coastkeeper have provided comments on the post-board meeting table. Salinas objects to our interpretation of the board's intent and wants the disputed subsection deleted. Monterey Coastkeeper recognizes the importance of the hydromodification language, and they want it maintained. The full comments are contained in attachment 5 and 6 that you've read in your report, and staff's responses are outlined in those reports. We also received two additional letters this week. We received a comment letter from the Salinas Valley Chamber of Commerce asking us not to insert hydromodification control requirements in the document. And also this week, we received a comment letter from the Grower Shipper Association asking the board to consider the impacts to the local business industry. And I believe Carol placed those into your folder, those two new letters. So we originally intended to come here today to simply ask for you to clarify your intent regarding the September board meeting action and to explain the impact of deleting those sections on the document. However, in evaluating the comment letters that we received from the City of Salinas, as well as Monterey Coast Keeper, it caused us to take another close look at the language of the document. In doing so, we also consulted with the Low Impact Development Center. In evaluating the comments, as well as the language, staff realized it's necessary to clarify what's required to meet the maximum extent practical standard. What we learned is that even with retaining the disputed hydromodification subsection, the language of the post-board meeting table is still not adequate. We are also not recommending that we simply revert to the pre-board meeting table either. Both tables failed to clearly distinguish between the requirements for water quality treatment and hydromodification control that I explained earlier. Both tables also suffer from some confusing language. In trying to remove redundancies at the meeting, important language from the pre-board meeting table was removed in the post-board meeting table. And the post-board meeting table failed to resolve the issue of the language not clearly distinguishing between hydromodification control and water quality treatment. So either table needs modification to bring the document up to the maximum extent practical standard. As a result, we can't in good faith just simply ask you to clarify your action or your intended action back in September regarding hydromodification controls. We are instead proposing new language to improve the likelihood that the standards would result in low-impact development. If you look at the development standards document as a whole, the document would lead you toward low-impact development. However, the specific language is written such that one could satisfy the requirements by using conventional methods. So I present kind of three potential options of where we could go from here. Option one would be to remove the disputed hydromodification control subsection. This is a literal interpretation of the verbiage contained in the audio of the board motion. Salinas' comment letter has advocated for this option. This option would leave the development standards without numeric performance criteria for hydromodification control. It would also leave some confusing language. It would not adequately protect water quality, and this option does not meet the maximum extent practical standard for the City of Salinas. And less protective language than this is what the board is asking for Phase 2 communities to be developing. Option 2 would be to keep the post-board meeting table.
Jennifer, could you back up to that last slide?
You got it.
What was the last point that you were trying to make there?
So if we went with the language in option one, the language in Salinas' stormwater development standards would be less protective language than that what the board is asking for the Phase 2 communities to develop.
Well, actually what the board is requiring of the Phase 2 communities.
Okay, requiring, yeah. Not asking. Okay, that's a good point. Thanks. Okay, so option two would be to keep the post-board meeting table. It would attempt hydromodification control for the large sites. However, as it's currently written, it would result in only a small step toward hydromodification control, and it would contain inadequate and confusing language. And option two has similar issues as option one, as far as not meeting the maximum extent practical standard and not protecting water quality adequately. Option three would be to require the City of Salinas to modify the language of the document, to provide clarity and establish an effective hydromodification control requirement. Water Board staff finds the City of Salinas cannot meet the maximum extent practical standard without controlling hydromodification through these or equivalent modifications to the development standards. Attachment 7 in your packet contains the proposed modified language for this option, and we can bring it up on the screen later if you'd like. The modified language requires large projects to demonstrate that the post-project runoff peaks and durations do not exceed the pre-development runoff peaks and durations up to the 10-year storm event, unless the applicant can demonstrate that the project flows will not detrimentally affect the downstream channel. Achieving the maximum extent practical standard needs to be an iterative process. It's possible that the 10-year event is not the appropriate upper limit for storm events from which protection is needed. It's also unknown if that 1-acre threshold of impervious surfaces is an adequate threshold to be using. And it's possible that other language in the document will need to be refined based on the results of the document's implementation. Throughout their permit term, the City of Salinas will need to assess the effectiveness of the standards and propose modifications to tailor the document to protect beneficial uses in the City of Salinas. Staff recommends to the board that this third option is the right step toward the City of Salinas meeting the maximum extent practical standard. The results of this action would be requirements for large sites to mimic natural hydrology and contain low-impact development design. And this option is necessary to achieve the maximum extent practical standard and to adequately protect water quality in Salinas. And with that, I'll take your questions. Clear as mud, right?
Clear. Okay. Clear. That was pretty good. Any board questions?
The only question I have is, I talked about large sites, but you didn't talk about small sites. And I think one of the concerns for cities would have would be redevelopment areas that have small facilities that want to redevelop. And where is that addressed, and how do we address that?
So there is language that talks specifically about redevelopment sites versus original sites. But to the first part of your question, as far as the smaller sites in general, the way that we're currently proposing the new language in Attachment 7, the smaller sites that don't hit the 1 acre of impervious surface threshold only have the water quality treatment standard. So all sites have to do that. And then for the big sites, that's when you trigger the hydro modification control requirements. Right. As far as specifically how redevelopment sites plays in, I know that the document discusses when those are triggered to even apply to the document at all. There's a certain threshold to even have to use the document. And we can pull those specifics up if you're interested.
Mr. Jeffries, you may recall from our previous hearings on this matter that the document contains applicability criteria for when the document applies to projects, any projects at all. And for redevelopment, the most appropriate applicability criteria is that if it doesn't add 5,000 square feet of impervious surface, it's not subject to the document. And so the example we talked about, like, might be a parking lot in the downtown area. If you replace that and there with, you know, some kind of mixed use project or something like that, and there's no net increase in impervious surface, the document wouldn't apply to that particular project.
Thank you.
Okay. No other board questions or comments for staff at this time? Okay, thank you. Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Chairman Young. And I just have, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out, that the city had requested a total of 20 minutes on this item, and the chair granted that request, and Steve Shimmick requested 15 minutes, and the chair granted that request.
Thank you, Chair and members of the board. I just want to go back to the statements that were made at the beginning of this hearing, and I thank you for those, and I appreciate the comments that you all gave. It did provide some clarity as to how this thing was even agendized, so I appreciate that. I want to reiterate for the record, though, that the city continues to object to this proceeding as being a full reconsideration of this item, and we in no way, by participating in this ongoing discussion, waive any of our rights that we have with respect to petitioning the board on the procedures that are going on here today or with respect to ultimately bringing a writ to have this item reviewed. I think it bears out that this is a full reconsideration just by looking at the agenda, which says the only action that's proposed on your agenda is board approval. The board approved the stormwater development standards already on September 4th. So I think that your agenda is inconsistent with what's proposed in your staff's report, which is an amendment, which is ultimately now becoming a full reconsideration of this item. So I just want to reiterate that on the record so that it is clear as to the city's position and the continued objection.
Carl Nizawa, Deputy City Engineer with the City of Salinas. You've probably seen me, three times? This is the third time this year, and you've seen me before, and thank you for allowing me to speak. I have to start. I'm going to go into technical things, but the first thing I wanted to say is I have to kind of support Chris Callahan here. He took a quiet beating from the board here. We do have a different recollection of the meeting. The tape, however, is undisputable as to what happened. My recollection of the meeting was that the city gave clear reasons why it objected to several of the inserted requirements. Dr. Press looked to reconcile the differences between the opposing staff's viewpoints. And in doing so, he basically struck a compromise with regards to the final motion. And Board Member Jeffries, you're correct. You did ask twice if the city understood what was occurring, and twice we indicated that we were. In fact, at one time, I reiterated what was being agreed to. I'd like to... Do we have another technical problem? Can you... is it blinking again on me? It's my computer blinking out again.
Seems like we had that trouble before too.
Yeah, we did. This I got to throw this one away.
Carl, why don't you put it on my desk?
Okay, stop. I apologize again. I'm going to have to do that.
We request a couple of minutes,
sure.
A break. We'll load it onto our machine and run.
We've stopped the clock, and we'll just take a 5-minute recess.
Okay. Jennifer, could you go over the question that you had started to answer or did answer just before?
Yeah, I think I said something that was potentially confusing, so I want to make sure and clarify that. In the table that we're providing or we're proposing in Attachment 7, the modified language, the smaller sites do have some hydro modification control requirements for the smaller storms. So if my statement earlier...
You left that one word out, for sure.
Yeah. So I want to make sure that was clear. Does that make sense? And I can read you exactly what that is. It's the 85th percentile, if you're interested. But.
Sure, I am. Will there be a point at which we actually go through the proposed
yes.
changes for option 3? So we have this document in front of us, but
mm-hmm.
we will go through this. Okay.
We will.
Carl.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry. The first thing I want to do is go into my perception of what happened at the meeting. As I mentioned before the break, my perception of what Dr. Press did was take two opposing staff viewpoints and consolidate that into a compromise agreement. And if I may play these audio files.
I just wanted to make one clarification. In the
Can you hear that?
The section For B, there's all this stuff about the 10-year peak that's crossed out, and you're in.
Can I play it again? Can you hear that?
He's looking for the mic point.
Okay.
I'm not sure which job.
Move on.
Yeah. I just wanted to make one clarification. In the section 4B, there's all this stuff about the 10-year peak that's crossed out, and you're intending to,
can you hear that?
To have that crossed out.
That's right. Okay. I'm intending actually to strike
just barely
4AB. Yes, and actually, and then just add a short sentence after, at the end of 3, reminding the reader that the methodology for demonstrating compliance, or for calculating actually the flow volume treatment methods, are in Chapter 4.4. That's all.
So does that work for the city? Striking the additions to 4A and B and inserting a reference works for the city.
Okay.
So in that tape, Chairman or Dr. Press looked to resolve the issues, and by striking 4A and B, which were the hydro modification requirements, he asked if the city concurred with that deletion, and the city concurred with it. That's the critical part of the meeting where an agreement was struck between the board and the city. The final motion reiterated that.
We're about to do.
Can you read back the motion? We just want to clarify that. That's all.
Okay. I have moved that we are adopting the staff's September 3rd revision, right, with the following change to section to reference number 3, page 2, section 3, after part B, that we staff add language to the effect that the flow and volume treatments will be calculated as outlined in Chapter 4, Section 4, 4.4.2, 4.4.3, okay? And that we then strike further on in that section, Part 4, on pages 2 and 3, and that then at the top of page 4 in Section 4.2, that staff add a sentence or modify the last sentence specifying that a combination of appropriate source control BMPs and low impact development treatment BMPs will be selected from the CASCO standards handbook hereby attached and as updated. That's it.
Okay. That's the motion.
I'll second.
We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
So in that, it's very clear that item 4, which was the disputed item, was struck in the final motion. Now, Mr. Briggs decided that he had the authority from the meeting or from the motion or from some preliminary discussion to make it so to remove that, and I'd like to play that part of it, the part that Mr. Briggs has indicated, make it so is also make it so consistent with the board motion.
Can't hear that at all.
The language and how it could be misinterpreted with regards to how this it fits in with the document, that the exact language that's actually inserted to the document be be done by city staff but approved by your staff so that it meets the intent of what you're trying to do, so that there's no hardship with regards to the exact insertion and problems with interpretation by development in the community. Because I can see some of that, and that's some of the whispering that's going on with me with some of the other things that are here.
No, this is these are the changes, and this is what we're voting on. I mean, I don't understand. You're wanting to do more changes?
Well,
to
no,
more,
I mean,
more wordsmithing.
No, it's some of the other things other than what's being discussed. There are other required revisions that have not been discussed. For example, page 5. You know, I'd like to hear back the motion, because does the motion include these required changes? And if they do, the suggestion that I make is that the city be allowed to work with staff in rewording some of it so it works with the document.
Well, you know, I think this is it. This is the day. This is the moment. We want to keep the suggested section 3. We're striking other parts. My motion is to only had to do with what I suggested before, which was
my suggestion is, if there's a problem that arises in implementation after we adopt these standards, then if you can't work it out with staff, then you can always come to the board and ask us to look at it. And you know, we've done things like that in the past, and you know, if we think it has merit, we'll do it.
Mr. Chair, I think the motion is asking staff to make it so in terms of the exact wording. And what I would suggest is that we will do that, and we will share it with the city prior to finalizing it and see if there's something that we missed. But it will have to be consistent with your motion.
Okay. I'm comfortable with that.
So in that tape, it's very clear that the city asked for some flexibility with regards to the language, and Dr. Press said no, that there's no flexibility, that the board will decide the language, and to make it so clause was to be consistent with the final motion. And that's what our interpretation of happened in the last meeting. Now I'd like to go forth with my technical presentation. Hopefully it'll work. Just to quickly recap some technical issues that the city brought up with regards to problems with the proposed hydro modification requirement, and it's not obviously working, so I'm just going to have to go through it real quickly. I'll just disconnect it here. I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. Computer-based imported solutions.
Carl.
Yes.
I thought you were going to load it onto our laptop, and then we were going to present it from ours.
We have an incompatible version of PowerPoint. We cannot run it on ours.
I apologize.
Okay.
The hydro modification in the Bay Area, where it's currently being practiced, is only required in areas with downstream erosion potential, and that's very important. What are the problems with hydro modification procedures as proposed in the Salinas area? It doesn't work as intended. It's extremely costly and burdensome, can negatively impact flood control, and the state of practice for how hydro modification is done is currently in flux. The premise for hydro modification is erosion control. The fact that you can do hydro modification and actually negatively impacts erosion control is simply bad government. So, again, why doesn't hydro modification work in Salinas? Typically, modeling for hydro modification is for the site. It's not for the regional flows. The regional flows in the Salinas area are what cause erosion. As discussed, and I'm sorry I couldn't show the the pictures of the region, but I did last time. It, Salinas is a small, flat, urban area in a very large watershed, which is mostly undeveloped. The larger flows come from the undeveloped areas. Those are the erosive flows. The erosive flows are a function of timing and not local volumes. So therefore, retaining flows for the premise locally of erosion control is actually false premise, because what happens is if you detain it, you allow it to go out at the same time as the larger flows coming down the hill. I indicated last time that hydromodification was very costly. To do that right, it can work. It requires a modeling, a regional model. And a quote given to Kennedy Jinks was that this type of model would cost about $1 million, and it would take about a year to do. It's not something simple. You're requiring now every project to take this regional model to make sure that their flows coming off their sites are not going to negatively impact the regional flows. I'm sorry you can't see this. The premise, again, for hydromodification is the prevention of local creek and stream erosion. The local creeks and streams in Salinas are actually sediment-laden. They're in the flat areas. They actually, sediment from upstream actually drops out. There isn't erosion in the local creeks and streams from local flows. So the premise for requiring hydromodification is not there. There is a lot of confusing information with regard to hydromodification. For instance, last year, a staff member, not this group here, said to me that when told that the city was basically following Contra Costa procedures with regards to its stormwater development standards, had told me that they were not happy with the city's using or thought to use some of the Contra Costa procedures. They wanted us to use Bay Area hydraulic model. Now, recently, we're told, no, don't use the Bay Area hydraulic model. Use the Contra Costa means. It is currently in a state of flux. You can just tell by how many changes have come across in the last few months. Every time the city turns around, the regional board staff wants to change things. And the way they want to change things is not by giving us, Chairman Young, what to do. They actually tell us how to do it and put it in the specifications. The problem is that they don't look at the whole manual, and it's confusing, and it's very difficult for developers or engineers to figure out what exactly to do because of this hodgepodge that's being inserted in the document. Now, last time, one of the problems we had with 4A, and that's what was described as a simple means for hydromodification. Harvey Oslick here, who's standing behind me, an expert in the area, said it was difficult to implement because it was confusing and it was not exact in how it was to be applied. Now, from that discussion, and this is no slight on staff because it was kind of ad hoc, that they indicated that they didn't see a problem with 4A, that 4A was, in fact, very much identical to a section in the back of the manual. Now, it wasn't Salinas' contention that there were redundancies. It was the defense of that item 4A is in which this item came up. Salinas' main contention with the standards is it's not clear, it's inserted, it's not what to do, it's how to do it, and that's problematic. One of the contentions made during the one of the contentions made during the hearing was that sections beyond section 4 were a guidebook. And the fact of the matter is the whole document is a requirement. So a requirement in section 4 or section 5 is a requirement on the developer. The way in which the manual is written is that the stated requirements in the front
provide information on what he's supposed to do, and he is supposed to look in somewhere in the other chapters to specifically find out how he's supposed to do it. One of the things that I hear in the meetings here is that the lack of some of these things will allow for structural controls with very limited volumes. And I have to tell you that that's not accurate, because that's only looking at Section 1. If you look at the rest of the manual, it specifically says what BMPs to use, and they are not structural controls. The BMP that's actually almost in 100% of the low-impact development projects that the Salinas has used is a bioretention soil. It is a volumetric device that we use for low-impact development. And that is the reason why we have said that this hydromodification requirement is not necessary when we oversize our BMPs, which actually have volume. Last year, Eric Burnson, member of the State Water Resource Board, who's probably the expert in the state with regards to hydromodification, came to Salinas and actually was very impressed and complimentary toward our low impact achievements. One thing he did say was that he said, I think that you should use your BMPs and take volumetric credit. And we're appreciative of that advice, and we are moving in that direction. Now, I want to get into some of the additional requirements. And I want to state for the record that these additional requirements on the Salinas community, again, are without any real demonstrated local need and evaluation of economic impact, or more importantly, input from the city, its stakeholders, and the general public. These are ad hoc inserted requirements. We did not have any input into these things, and for you to make decisions and require us to place these in there at this time, we think is premature, because the community and the staff really have problems with the inserted language. For example, item 3A, all projects are required to have volumetric BMPs. That means, Mr. Jeffries, all small projects, not just the 1 acre or more. This creates a real problem. Can you see the 7-Elevens out there putting in detention basins or some sort of flow device? Some sort of volumetric device. It basically eliminates the use of very effective flow-based BMPs when they're most appropriate. This has a large cost on very small projects. Item 4.
Carl, what about pervious substrate?
I'm sorry?
What about pervious substrate in a situation like that?
Pervious substrate, the sublayer for the geomorphology for Salinas is basically clay. We don't have much infiltration in the local soils. You put a pervious surface on top of an impervious surface, you won't get a whole lot there.
Is there clay throughout the entire Salinas City?
And if it's not at the surface, it's 3 feet below. There's what the farmers call hard pans at multiple layers. It's the reason we have floods, Chairman Young, is because the ground does not saturate. It's the reason we have Carr Lake in the middle of the city, is because the water doesn't percolate. It's a problem with LID. It really is. Item 4 is problematic, and it reinserts the redevelopment criteria, which at the July 11th meeting was changed. So the community came forward, various members, and said, we have problems with your redevelopment criteria. This item 4 reinserts it. Again, it's almost as if someone decided, well, let's change, even though the board had decided before that we're going to take this action after a lot of public outcry, we're going to go back and change it again. That reinsertion conflicts with other sections of the document.
the redevelopment criteria that was, and this is contrary to what staff just talked about, because the item says replacement. It doesn't say new impervious space. It says replacement of impervious surface. That's what's in language that's in the addition. This is inconsistent with EPA smart growth policies. And if we're looking at water quality, when you do redevelopment, you're not actually creating new water quality issues. But when you build new, you could. And this encourages new development over redevelopment. That's a problem with that. And that's why that was previously changed. Item 4 also requires for new development, redevelopment over 1 acre, continuous simulation of computer modeling or sediment transport modeling. Now, before, staff said, well, you know, if you really object to all this computer stuff, there is an out. Well, that out is gone. There is no alternative here. You have to do the computer modeling if you're redevelopment or new development for anything over 1 acre. One thing that was said last time, and we agree with staff on this, said that, you know, the city has a future growth area. It has thousands of homes. These development standards impact that new development. Shouldn't that development with that size have this computer modeling, this hydrology controls? I know that staff here is new and wasn't around the previous year when the city did a comprehensive review and a comprehensive study to place hydro modification requirements on the future growth area. In fact, an elite team of folks led by Bruce Phillips of Pace Engineering and Dan Mathias of Wood Rogers led a comprehensive approach that exceeded Bay Area and current proposed requirements. Eric Bernson of the State Water Board and your staff all saw this document. Steve Schimmick has this document. He probably hasn't said anything. But that document, instead of getting praise from the regional board, it was like, where's low-impact development? Well, this is hydro modification. And the city requires that of the future growth area. It is in the mitigation in the general plan supplemental EIR. So we agree with staff that area, as large as it is, should be looked at for controls. An approach was developed. We did peer review. Harvey Oslick of RBF, who spent many years looking at the hydrology in this region, did a peer review of that approach. That I shouldn't go into the details of it, but it's very elaborate.
Could you wrap it up, Carl?
And yes,
I'll give you guys some more time at the end.
Okay.
But you've gone beyond the 20 minutes.
What I'll do is I'm going to turn it over to Harvey Oslick here, and he can describe more issues with the insertion language in how to do hydro modification in Salinas.
I actually got my hydrographs on there.
Okay. Okay.
My name is Harvey Oslick. I am a consultant to the city of Salinas. I work for RBF Consulting. I've been doing hydrology in the Monterey area for about 10 years, and including a lot of work on the development of the reclamation ditch regional model. I've also had extensive experience designing hydro modification management facilities in the Bay Area, so I'm very familiar with implementing the Santa Clara Valley program and the Contra Costa program. If you could. One of the you know, one of the issues that we have is as I'm an engineer and I try to implement, design standards, and what we're trying to develop here is a design standard. We're not actually trying to write a permit language from which development standards would get developed to match or to meet the requirements of a permit. And so the intent of what was being done by the city of Salinas was to work on meeting the requirements of the permit. And so you put in to develop procedures. The permit language calls out numeric criteria that are, yes, they are consistent with some water quality standards that have been in place for a while, but they're what's in the current CASCA guidelines. And then it provides some information about how to use those, when only certain types of those facilities can be used, so that the volume-based systems are used at certain times. But it provides very definitive methods for saying, okay, here's this 0.6 inches of rainfall. What does that mean? How do you calculate the basin volume from it? How do you, size facilities if you use one type or another? And that's what you need in a design standard. You need something that an engineer coming in can actually design a facility. Some of the newer requirements that are getting put in are being proposed are more of permit language, trying to get permit language stuff, but there's not enough information to know how exactly those would get implemented from a practical standpoint. Knowing some of the process that's occurred in some of the other permit developments to where Contra Costa now has a tool, a little computer program that you can use to size their management practices, and Santa Clara Valley also has a computer program that to show how to meet theirs. But some of the language that was proposed in the 1114 thing is problematic from those standpoints. But really what I wanted to talk about, if I could just have another minute, is...
I'll give you two more minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, if you could wrap it up.
Yeah. The one of the big issues about arbitrarily assigning hydromodification management criteria and trying to implement programs like other areas have done is that Salinas is distinctly different than Contra Costa County hydrology or Santa Clara hydrology. Now, hydromodification is one thing. Hydromodification attempts to do something over a long term from a site. You match flow durations that you don't exceed the number of hours that you have certain flows. It doesn't match hydrographs. It matches a long term average. LID tries to minimize the impact of a development, but you don't focus on trying to meet an exact release rate. You size it, and you try to provide opportunities for percolation. You try to make it so that it reduces runoff, but there aren't exact standards to it. Well, in Santa Clara County, they have exact standards, and I designed a detention basin to meet those. It was the first one that got constructed to meet those standards. And what I did is I just extracted a hydrograph from one of the storms, just went in there and pulled one of the storms out, zooming in from a 50-year simulation. And what you can see is that the green line is the pre-project hydrograph. There's a faint dashed line. Unfortunately, it doesn't show up real well. But there's this faint dashed line here that goes up above is what would happen if you didn't do any hydromodification. And then the blue line is the release from the hydromodification facility. And as you can see, what it does is it delays the peak from maybe 6 hours, and some of the volume gets to be released even a day after or 2 days after. And the problem is that in Salinas, this is where the inflow comes in the Salinas area, right into Carr Lake where the development is occurring. This shows the flow rates coming in from the Gavilan Creek watershed. This is at least 6 hours later. And then this is the release rates coming out of the out of Carr Lake and down the reclamation ditch. And you're seeing that that is peaking a day and a half after the inflow from Carr Lake. So providing opportunities for percolation where it's feasible is great, reducing the volume. But actually, if you just take volume that would be released here and put it into Carr Lake here instead of here, it actually has the potential of making things worse than better. And that's why we can take measures to try to reduce runoff, but we have to be real careful about what we're doing when we look at site-specific long-duration simulations and not just adopt something that somebody else is using, because you could shift volume releases to a time when it could be detrimental instead of it being beneficial.
I just like to. Are you finished? Okay. I just like to conclude real quickly. The city of Salinas wants to do the right thing. We want to control any environmental effect with regards to creek and stream erosion. But we think that the regulations that need to come and the requirements from development need to come forward are those tailored for the local region. And we would be happy to work with your staff in formulating such criteria, but the criteria put forward today is not that criteria, and it provides, it's an ad hoc addition to a document that, in spite of its flaws, has been thought out. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any board questions?
No, I just have a couple of comments, Mr. Dr. Hunter, I didn't mean anything. Go ahead.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. Carl, could you help me understand and clarify, because I'm still not clear. You state that Dr. Press was attempting to find a compromise between two opposing views. Can you succinctly say what those two opposing views were that he was intending to address in your view?
The major objection from the city of Salinas was the hydro modification requirement, the computer one specifically. He understood that. So he said, okay, I'm good with removing that. What's wrong with 4A? What's wrong with the other method? And please explain to me why you cannot live with that. And that became the source of some confusion, I guess. But we said we saw it as being problematic because it wasn't clear. And staff said, well, it could, we defend that because it's we see that as already being in your document. And that's why this thought about redundancy is in. But at the end, Dr. Press said, listen, no one is objecting, or meaning no one, it means Salinas. No one from Salinas is objecting to what they already have in the document. Why don't we just take what's in the back and put it in the front? That was his solution to reconciling the different positions from staff and city staff. And with that, we formed an agreement. The agreement was, we're going to take 4A and 4B. Either Mr. Young or Mr. Jeffries indicated, is the city okay with that? And the city said, I said, yes, we agree with the deletion of 4A and 4B. That carried through to the final motion. Now, I understand the concerns from staff, from the board, that this type of quick action at the board level without deep thinking could lead to some regrets. Obviously, the staff regrets not saying, hey, hold a second here, I don't know if I can live with that. Later on, it obviously did. There are things there, and we saw this as a compromise because people had told me that there were things in the staff's recommendations that we were forced to accept that we feel compromised. For example, one stated requirement in the September requirements was the priority for sumps. That is, vaults with pumps as a priority. And
well,
we thought...
Let me stop you because I think the details and your interpretation are clear. Yeah. I think what I heard you say, though, that the early on in the process of trying to understand what questions the city had about what may be in the document in different places and how the consistency between those. And I heard you say right now that there was a concern about where the information may already appear in the document and trying to clarify. That to me is what I'm trying to convey to you, is, and I said earlier, is my recollection of how that dialogue occurred and why that dialogue occurred. So I do understand that you had differences, and I did read all the material that the city submitted, so I do appreciate that. But I think it's still not clear to me that Dr. Press was hearing two opposing views and trying to find a compromise. I certainly didn't hear that in his argument, so that's why I followed up with the question. Thank you.
Mr. Jeffries.
Well, I'll see if I can put this in perspective. I just wanted to, since I live in Salinas and I'm very familiar with the area, just relate some of this to the board. That the city engineer, and I think somebody else alluded, that all of the city of Salinas has clay layers. That's not exactly true, but the majority of the city does. There is a percolation problem within the city of Salinas itself, and even to the southwest of Salinas, where the agriculture community has put clay pipes in to drain their fields because of the clay layers, that the water doesn't percolate during hot, large events, or even sometimes during their irrigation of their crops, and those drain off into drainage ditches. There are occasions that when there are major events that some of the homes in part of the northeast Salinas will flood in their basements or underneath their homes because of the water table rises because of the clay layers. And there are several clay layers throughout the city of Salinas, but not all. And for you folks that are not familiar with the percolation area, the best percolation area is just southeast of Salinas, or between Salinas and Chular, if you're familiar with the 101. And that's where the Monterey County Water Resources tries to keep the Salinas River wet to have that percolation for the water tables in the Salinas Valley. Now, true enough, in some events, and
Can I just interrupt a second? Because I think the board, you're adding information to the record that hasn't been testified about, and so if you
want
to make
think he, but a I think the engineer,
comment about...
Well, let me just ask you a question. But he did bring up the issues about the clay layers and percolations in Salinas. And I'm responding to that.
Okay.
And I'm probably reinforcing some of his argument, but not totally agree with him, because I think there is some need for hydro modification in areas of Salinas. And again, I think Dr. Press was not trying to remove hydro modification. He was just trying to clarify the language in his motion. And I think what was left out was some of the discussion and some of the instructions that the board members gave to the staff to clean up the language that we agreed upon, at least what we thought we agreed upon. So with that, Mr. Chair, I just want to bring some of those issues to the rest of the board members that may not be familiar with the city of Salinas and some of their hydrology problems that they have within the city. But again, and that was one of the reasons I asked earlier about small and large projects, especially redevelopment projects with hydro modification, and what does that affect? And I do realize that that would be, for redevelopment, would be a tremendous cost. But we're still required under law to follow that law, and that's, I think that's where I'm having problems struggling with some of this information.
Okay. Go ahead.
I had a question for Salinas. This is feedbacking a lot, huh? Sorry. In the attachment number 7 to this item that the staff prepared that's dated November 14, I just had a question about I was a little unclear on what specifically you're disagreeing with. And so there's reference number 2 on there, November, the one that says attachment to the resolution as revised on November 14th. You have that?
Attachment number 7 to the staff report,
correct?
Right, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so reference number 2, did you, that says section 1.5 stormwater management, and there's an underlined, did you have any issues with that? I didn't hear you say anything.
Oh, no, I think our stated objections were not for these items. A lot of this is just clarification that they was inserted.
So I just so for item number 2, you didn't state any.
Mr. Oslick has a comment on that. If you want to give him time for that.
Is that okay?
You're talking to reference number 2.
Right.
Yeah. Where it says, you know, project shall employ on-site stormwater BMPs to infiltrate, disperse, and retain stormwater on-site to the maximum extent practical without causing flooding or erosion impacts. It's a very generalized statement, but it doesn't leave it, and it can be interpreted to be extremely onerous. Or it could be interpreted that, well, wait, it's in the design standards, so I'm just going to go and follow the procedures that are in the design standards that show me how to design a BMP, because obviously the stuff that's in the design standards that tell me how to design a BMP, that must be the right thing to do for the maximum extent practical standard. So it just is a statement that adds confusion without defining a requirement. And is not helpful from a standards perspective of an engineer trying to use this document to design a facility.
Okay, thanks.
If given more time, we can add more comments to what we feel are flaws in the additions.
Well, I think the concern that I have is that your permit actually says you're supposed to do this. So, and of course, you can do it in the way that
these are the development standards.
And right, in your permit, it defines what is to be in your development standards, and it actually...
I think what he's trying to say is that for us to implement this, what's required in the permit, we need to clarify what the engineer developers need to do.
And can I make a comment, Francis, about that? So you take issue with that because it's too general and not specific enough. And you've taken issue with the other reference numbers because they're too specific and not generalized.
I take issue with the fact that they don't work well with the standards that we have done. Again, when you have applicability requirements that conflict with the main applicability requirements in the document, there is a conflict.
Okay, I know that.
And I can add also that there is one issue that hasn't been brought to light, and I know that staff's aware of this, is the striking of pre-project to pre-development, especially when you talk about redevelopment. That's a very serious issue because pre-development, as defined by your staff, is prior to any man-made disturbance. So what you're asking redevelopment to do is compare their runoff prior to any man-made disturbance to after the project, and that is a burden which may in fact trip that redevelopment project to a new development, and that's why we find it very onerous.
Carl, do you have any specific examples of that with numbers and something you've estimated, design, costed out, that you can say, look, we've looked at this, this is what would happen?
We can certainly do that, Chairman Young, but I think the premise for the striking out and the reinsertion was your staff's, and I think that they were cognizant of that and the reinsertion of redevelopment into the standard of the implications, especially since Salinas has specifically raised this issue in a previous meeting and the language was changed following that in July, Chairman Young. So this issue had been brought up before. We're happy to bring back to you examples of where this is problematic.
Okay, I had another
question.
Reference number 3 of that same November 14th. The way I read number 1 under required revision is essentially the same as the number 1 that was there in any other version we have before us. And so you're not objecting to that. I haven't understood any objection to that. I just wanted to clarify.
Item 3?
Reference number 3, item number 1 under the column stated required revision.
I'm sorry. I have on page 2.
That's page 1, attachment 7.
Okay.
Reference number 3.
Okay.
Number 1,
yes.
Under required revision.
Yes.
The change looks to me to just move a parenthetical to a sentence, and you aren't objecting to that.
No.
Okay. Then the same for item number 2, which starts on page 1 and goes over to page 2. It looks like it's just a change from a parenthetical, and you have no problem with that. Then item number 3 now appears to distinguish volume reduction and treatment into two categories. But the language that's added there, so there's item number 3, subsection capital A, and it's now called volume reduction requirements, and it appears that this was moved from another paragraph.
Yes.
And so
that's our objection, because now you changed it from a 1 acre or more requirement to all projects having to do this requirement, and that was our stated objection.
Okay, so I'm just trying to understand your objection.
Right,
so for
3A,
your objection isn't with the language itself, but with that it's appears to go to 1.
We had previous objections to how that's to be implemented, and that was the source of the problem that was discussed.
Okay, and so that was the part that you think was removed by Dr. Press, that language.
4A was removed by Dr. Press.
And now it's in 3A.
And now it's reinserted into 3A,
okay,
which has a different applicability requirement.
Okay, so it's both you objected before, and now it's a little broader because now, in your view, it applies
now
to
we
all
object to it more.
Projects.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then 3B, those seem to be the same. 3B, A and B are what was already in the previous version, and are you objecting to those two?
I think it's
those are in all the versions as far as I can tell.
Right, right. Well, again, we didn't object to it.
Okay.
We see their intent in adding that language, and we don't object to it.
Okay. And then so that's 3B. Then 3C, that also starting at the bottom of page 2 over to page 3, and there are no changes, and you didn't object to that before.
We don't see a problem with that.
Okay.
But what about to the degree that it implicates 3A? In other words, C, project applicants must comply with 3A and 3B. I mean, you have issue with 3A.
Right.
Okay, but I just want to just be clear, because I wasn't clear on which sections you have concerns with. So then we go to page 3, which is item number 4.
And that's the last page.
The last page. In addition, and this is the part that applies only to 1 acre or more, either do this model for a 10-year, 24-hour event or conduct an assessment. Those are the new things the staff has added to replace. And is that also the part that was removed by Dr. Press as far as you're concerned?
Yes.
The B and C?
Well, obviously it's changed, but 4A and all of 4A was deleted before, and some of, 4A was reinserted into 3A.
Okay. And then this... I'm I'm trying to figure out which version is which. I just want to just be clear which version. So four A and B were removed. That was formerly 4A and B were removed by Dr. Press in your view, and then now the staff has added a new 4A or revised 4A and B, and that, and you're concerned about those two things, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that. And then I had a question for staff. The way I understand it, if you look at 4A and B on page 3 of your proposed required revisions, A is to demonstrate that they can do either of these things, A or B. And A is to do a continuous modeling or computer simulation model. And B is to conduct an assessment, and then they would do certain things unless the assessment shows that there's not, it's not going to create a water quality problem. So they have, one way is to do a model and the other way is to do an assessment.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, both cases there's do some kind of a modeling, right? Both A or B.
I guess, can you clarify that? This was a
question. I'm just trying to understand. One of the concerns that the city raised was that now they have to do it in a certain way, and before they had options that they could either do modeling or not do modeling. And I'm trying to understand.
I could clarify that, okay, if it's helpful. I'm Dominic Rock with the Water Board staff. The requirement as proposed is that large sites over an acre would be required to demonstrate that they were meeting pre-project or pre-development peaks and durations for a range of flows. Okay, if they conduct the continuous simulation and they discover that their development actually is going to exceed the pre-development rates and durations, they then are under a separate requirement to demonstrate through sediment transport modeling or additional analysis that it won't matter, that this particular channel, the receiving waters, and the downstream reaches won't be affected by exceedances of those rates and durations.
So, for example, the diagram that you showed about the Salinas, the particular...
And the, and the Gabalon.
Right. That if they demonstrated that that's the pre-project way, they could continue to have the runoff.
I don't think that was the intent of his illustration. What I understood was that he was trying to demonstrate that under certain scenarios, there was the possibility that the release from control facilities, namely basins designed after the hydrographic management basin approach that Santa Clara uses, that you could potentially coincide, the release of those might coincide with the peak from the upstream watershed, the Gabalon watershed, and that could induce additional flood hazard. And
okay.
I should mention, well, let me get okay. back to your questions.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that they seem to be concerned that your proposal would result in aggravating existing circumstance.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to me that that's your intent, as your intent is to mimic pre-project conditions. And if the pre-project conditions are as they describe, then they wouldn't have to do certain things if that would, in fact, aggravate the pre-project.
Pre-development.
Well, no, it's pre-project in here. I didn't find any pre-development. Yeah.
Right. Pre-project is struck out and pre-development is inserted.
Okay. Well...
The difference is significant, because if you are redeveloping in, say, an apartment complex in an urban area, you now have to compare it to when that was a pristine environment, not as the project was existing before that remodeling.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to get at both of those, but the first one was that your intent is not to have them do something that actually aggravate the pre the pre-existing conditions, and that's how I read this, and I just wanted to confirm that that's
what you mean. The intent of the language that staff proposed was that it's all about the effects, the erosive or sedimentation effects on downstream reaches, and so our intent was just to manage flows to prevent effects on downstream conditions that would be problematic. And you could potentially demonstrate, these flows are above the pre-project or the pre-development condition, but they aren't going to have an effect. For example, all of the downstream reaches are concrete channelized, or for example, the condition of the downstream reaches is such that it can actually sustain additional peaks and durations. So this is the opportunity for them to demonstrate that in the event that they do exceed those durations and peaks, that those effects on stream channel, on hydromodification effects, is ameliorated or eliminated or insignificant. I want to point out, though, that it appears as though the implication was that the requirement here could potentially lead to an increased flood hazard. And the city requires that developers evaluate their potential to cause flooding. So if the city requires this hydromodification criteria and that the developer demonstrate they aren't causing flooding, theoretically, under a scenario as presented with that hypothetical hydrograph, in which the Gabalon peak and the release from these new developments was peaking and causing additional flooding, the developer would come to the city and say, this isn't going to work. I'm going to cause flooding if I use this requirement. And I think it would be, I don't think the board intends to have our hydromodification requirements trump flood protection and public safety concerns. So I think in those circumstances, you would actually look for a compromise. But to present that as the usual case or the anticipated outcome, I don't think is appropriate or accurate.
Well, how in the process does the city have that flexibility or ability to kind of work that conundrum out?
You could ask that question to the city, but I would presume that there are opportunities.
Well, the city's going to feel that's under mandate from the permit to do X, and you're suggesting that,
they could explain that to us in that circumstance. If they're concerned about a compliance question relative to the board's permit, they would contact staff and say, look, we have this seeming disconnect. But it really points to the broader problem that is facing all of the MS4s, all of the municipalities, which are trying to integrate hydromodification control into their standard way of doing business. And that is, there are disconnects. There are conflicts. There are institutional, organizational barriers to just fitting this in, and it's going to take time. And I think we are comfortable with trying to work through those as they come up.
Well, and just to clarify, make sure I'm correct, but in reference number 2 of your proposed required revisions, where it says stormwater management 1.5, it has the added language, project shall employ on-site stormwater BMPs to infiltrate, disperse, and retain stormwater to the MEP without causing flooding and erosion impact. So if, in fact, the BMP would cause that, then you wouldn't have them do that BMP.
Exactly.
So I think there is, does that clear?
In my view,
that
does
make the out that if they you get the problem you've described, then the city could say, no, developer, don't do that BMP because it's demonstrated that it'll cause aggravate an existing condition instead of helping with it. Okay, and then my last question was.
But before you go on to the last question, because I need clarification on that, as I read that, without causing flooding or erosion impacts, what if you already have flooding or erosion impacts in that receiving water? And so this is just I mean, is it your intent that there not be any additional
added
to that baseline?
That is the intent.
Because this looks like... Okay.
So it's causing.
Certainly the flooding is already there.
There could be erosion, sedimentation. There could
already
be
happening.
Systems completely out of whack,
right,
or through some sort of disequilibrium, and we would just simply require that they don't, you know, add to that.
And I guess the whole point is to try to contain the parcel to the some pre-project development hydrograph as the standard. I mean, it does make perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
There shouldn't be any development which is adding even an incremental amount to this, because then you get a lot of incremental amounts throughout the whole city, and boom, you've got inflation with the problem. So, yeah.
Okay, and then...
Okay, go ahead, Francis.
Okay, my last question was the question about the pre-project versus pre-development, because in that 4A, again on page 3 of the required revision, you crossed out pre-project and pre-development, then your new language you've added uses pre-project and post-project. So I did have a similar question to the city of the difference, what you're meant by that difference.
Yeah, the latter language where it says pre-project, where it says for storm events up to and including the 10-year, 24-hour event with a continuous simulation model of runoff in the pre-project and post-project condition using 30 years or more of data, rainfall data, we meant to use project. And so to be consistent with that latter part, we will gladly change that reference to pre-development to pre-project.
So in the second line of A, put it back to the way it was?
Correct. It's inconsistent with
yeah.
what we added later.
All right.
That was the way we intended it in the first place, wasn't it?
I'd like to point out some issues with this statement, if I could, that when you start doing continuous simulations, the concepts of evaluating things on continuous simulations is different than doing discrete events. When you're an engineer applying a document, and somebody says use a 10-year, 24-hour event, you go to a design standard, you find the hydrology, you find the rainfall distribution for that 10-year design event, and you use it. When you run a continuous simulation, you have to find the rainfall data, which, again, that is one of these issues that when somebody was to say your requirement now for anything greater than an acre is to do a 30-year simulation, that is an onerous requirement when there isn't a tool readily available to accomplish that, and there isn't right now. But the language itself, when you look at it, 10-year, 24-hour, and you also look at 30-year simulation from somebody who's done a lot of both, it just the language is inconsistent with methodology that an engineer employs.
Chairman Young, Water Board staff would
yes.
like a couple of minutes to rebut
sure.
the discharger's testimony in general.
Okay.
Can we do that now?
There's other commenters, right?
Right.
Yeah. Why don't we hold off and but keep your notes, and we'll go ahead and get into the other speakers that we have, and you may have additional things to comment on. Okay. Our first speaker, Steve Shemek, and Mr. Shemek has 15 minutes.
I have a PowerPoint presentation, please. And it's on the desktop, and there's two Shemeks, so that's the... Yeah. Oh, man, we don't need that at this point, do we? Yep, that's it. Thank you so much. So, Chair Young, board members and staff, my name is Steve Shemek. I represent Monterey Coast Keeper. Thank you for hearing me once again on this issue. First of all, this is a map of the future growth area, and that gives a sense of what's at stake here. All that gray is the future growth area. One statement was made that a lot of the development is planned for Carr Lake. I don't know if that just was a slip of tongue or what, but I mean, we hope not. We certainly hope not. The future growth area is not Carr Lake; it's the area around Carr Lake. The statement was also made, and as Board Member Jeffries mentioned, that much of Salinas is underlain with clay, and much of the central area of Salinas is underlain with clay. But this is a known information. I'd like to point out that that there is depth to shallowest clay layer information, and Salinas has objected to those maps being included in the development standards. So we have that information. Those maps are available. They were in the original documents provided by Kennedy Jenks, and Salinas has asked that those not be included. So much of the future growth area actually does have good, decent, better drainage. Not great. It's not like Marina that's sitting on top of sand, but it has drainage. So there's a lot at stake here. LAFCO has approved and Salinas has annexed the future growth area. The future growth area is 12,000 to 15,000 new homes. Salinas staff and the developers have been working closely together over the past couple of years on these developments. Detailed planning has begun. Here's some of the plans and some of the site plans that already exist. These are not final. These are conceptual, but this is what they're doing their hydrograph modeling off of, which, and to do that, they have to have their street layouts and everything like that. But we have time. The collapse of the housing boom has given us the opportunity to assure that these homes, the equivalent to another Monterey, that's the size of the future growth area, are planned to modern standards incorporating tried and true practices. We have an opportunity here. Why are we here? Well, prior to the September Regional Board meeting, staff created a table of required revisions meant to improve the Salinas design standards and bring them to a point where they minimally met MEP. On several previous occasions, Salinas had drafted standards that were inadequate. On one occasion, staff and the board rejected the draft design standards. On a second try, the staff submitted the standards to the LID Center in Maryland. They found the standards inadequate and offered over 30 pages of comments and ideas of how the standards could be improved. On the next try, staff again found serious flaws and omissions. This time, in August and September, in an effort to bring this project to completion, the staff offered a table of required revisions complete with text. The table of revisions distributed in advance of the meeting included requirements for LID planning, hydromodification controls, and a list of source control BMPs. I'd like to briefly mention that these required revisions all focused on Section 1 of the design standards. This is the table of contents, actually. Section 1 is where users will go to see exactly what they need to do. It is important to note that Regional Board staff, the Design Center, several members of the Salinas NPDES stakeholder group, and our consultant, Mr. Dan Cloak, all found the design standards difficult to use. If Section 1 is not precisely clear, the document will be much less usable, in our opinion. Cross-referencing from Section 1 to other sections of the standards to find additional requirements adds to the confusion. We have all been focusing on Section 1 because Section 1, according to the table of contents, is where the requirements reside. On the day before the board meeting, staff released a supplemental. We have to assume that the supplemental was the result of negotiations between Regional Board staff and Salinas. The supplemental stripped the list of source control BMPs. But it is our assumption that this is the result of negotiations. We don't know that for sure. These are just a list of BMPs, and these have been chosen to not be included in your newest table of required revisions. But let's keep our eye on the ball. Let's not you know, we would like to see these back in, but let's keep our eye on what's going on. Pardon me?
That, could you back up and identify the beginning of that series? That is that in the first section of their...
That was in the first table of required revisions, and in the second table of required revisions, right, issued as a supplemental, right, they were stricken out.
Right, and it, but it was to appear in which chapter or section?
It was section 4, I believe.
Okay.
Or, well, section 1 in the table of contents, okay, because these would be required BMPs.
Okay.
All right? Salinas insisted that required revisions 1.5.3.4A and B were redundant to their document design standards sections 4.4.2 and 4.4.3. Salinas was very insistent. On questioning, regional board staff, unfortunately, answered that the contested sections must be equivalent. And that was a direct question by Dr. Press. Are these equivalent? The answer was yes. That was a mistake. It was an unfortunate mistake. Nothing was meant by it. But we have to keep in mind that when Salinas asserts that you know, what the motion was about, the motion was based on erroneous information provided by staff and by the city of Salinas that these two things were equivalent. They were not. So, in my view, you're simply moving ahead to correct a mistake. Immediately after the meeting, I mean, you probably saw me walking around, you know, like a cat in the back of the room as you guys were doing this. You know, I knew that what you had done was struck a very important piece of the standards. We literally that day contracted with our consultant, Mr. Dan Cloak, to take a look at what had been done. He got back to us that, yes, in fact, the requirement for hydro modification controls and LID had been struck. We forwarded our concerns to regional board staff, but it's frankly our impression that regional board staff already knew that it had happened and was on top of it and was working to bring about change. We are here today because board action was based on erroneous information. I don't believe that there was a malicious intent on anyone's part. Mistakes were simply made. What should be done? Very quickly, this is the 4.4.2 and 4.2.3 that was supposedly equivalent. So we would like to see the list of BMPs reinserted. This is part of our appeal to the state board. There's the list. The one that was contested was right there. You received several letters, and this was really the only one that you received letters and comments about, and we would agree that this, the language in yellow, would be helpful. All industrial processes and activities, with the exception of agricultural processing and packing, are to be performed indoors. We agree that that would be helpful. All modern cities are designed with, you know, where the you know, garbage bins are on sloped things which drain to the sanitary sewage. This simply says this is how you have to do it. Our consultant, Mr. Cloak, is saying, look, most cities find this helpful. It helps them move through plan checking and just say, yep, we have it figured out that you know, dumpsters ought to be on a slab, and you know, that should not be convex, and it ought to be covered somehow. I mean, this is not rocket science. But what else should be done next? In staff opinion option 2, staff option 2 has suggested simply reinserting 1.5.34A and B back into the table of required revisions. And in option 3, staff is suggesting refinement and clarification of section 1.5, including those disputed sections. Let me digress for a brief moment and say that for much of this process, we felt we were dragging Salinas kicking and screaming towards effective standards, and we felt staff was on a very steep learning curve, and so were we. But none of us were convinced, really, of what should be done. Staff was unsure. We were unsure. We hired consultants. Staff hired consultants. We have noticed a huge jump in capacity and confidence in the past few weeks as your new LID Center staff has come on board. It's huge. We feel it. I believe option three reflects the advanced thinking of your new LID staff. I believe that this language still offers developers flexibilities and options, but requires them to meet adequate hydromodification standards. Let me quote from the staff report in reference to option three. This appears on page four. Water Board staff finds that the City of Salinas cannot meet the MEP standard without controlling hydromodification through these or equivalent modifications to the development standards. Design standards that require LID and hydromodification controls are not a surprise to the city. The NPDS permit in Attachment 4 requires it. In December 2005, the executive officer sent a letter to then Salinas Mayor Anna Caballero and the city attorney's office detailing the requirement for LID and detailing what MEP meant in this circumstance. In 2007, the executive officer sent a letter to LAFCO, the city, and the city attorney's office stating that the future growth area must be planned using the new design standards and incorporating LID. So what are Salinas' arguments against this? Salinas has said the required revisions created redundancies. Yet when Executive Officer Briggs asked Salinas to point out redundancies, Salinas did not respond. Salinas is saying the board cannot reconsider the decision. Very unfortunately, the decision was based on a series of errors. That's too bad. Here we are today. Let's get this done. Salinas is saying that these requirements exceed the requirements of the permit, yet staff in a staff report has shown you the exact place in the permit where requiring pre- and post-development studies and control of flows to prevent downstream erosion and protect stream habitat. Monterey Coastkeeper has consistently tried to push and pull this process along. Many months ago, the board challenged us to provide specific language to improve the permit. We responded by hiring one of the top consultants in the West who provided precise language. Today marks a point when your LID center has surpassed our best efforts. I ask that you reinsert the list of source control BMPs. I'm prepared to lose that one. I haven't said that to staff, but I've inferred it. And I urge you to accept your staff recommendation three. And I further urge you to refrain as best a board can from editing on the fly. Your LID center and your staff has surpassed us all. Humbly, I would suggest that they know best. If Salinas wants the board to rehear this permit, I would suggest to you that we are 3.5 years into this permit. In another 6, 8, 10 months, it's going to be time to start working on it again anyway. Let's pass this puppy. And let's get on with it. And if they find problems over the next year, we're going to be reconsidering this five-year permit in another 10 months anyway. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you for your comments. Any board questions? Mr. Briggs?